Three or four thoughts with you this morning that you're probably already familiar with. Brian, I was going to meet your wife, but I just need to say hi.
Thank you.
I probably enjoyed your husband 2 years ago, and glad to have you all back in trouble. Let me throw out three thoughts for you, maybe four here in minutes. It's Psalm 139, but for your consideration. And the first thought is in verses 1 through 6. And Ron, if you have that, why don't you read that and think in terms of the first thought being God knows me. The second passage we'll look at, God goes with me. The third passage is God made me. And the fourth passage we'll look at is God searches me. So if you'll take the first six verses and read out loud, we'll follow along with it.
O Lord, search me and know me. Thou dost know when I sit down and when I rise up. Thou dost understand my thought from afar. Thou dost scrutinize my path and my lying down, and art intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, O behold, O Lord, thou dost know it all. Thou hast enclosed me behind and before, and laid thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot attain it.
Thanks. Bob, you have a Bible there handy to you? Or, yeah. Why don't you take, not only does God know me, but God is committed to go with me. And take verses 7 through 12.
7 through 12.
Yeah.
If I go up to the heavens, you are there. And if I make my bed in the depths, you are there. And if I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast.
Not only does God know me, God's committed to go with me. And but God has also made me. He's made you. Bill, how about taking passage 13 through 16?
For thou didst form my inward parts, thou didst weave me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are thy works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from thee when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Thine eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in thy book they were all written, the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them.
Thank you. God really does know me. God really is committed to go with me. God made me. He made you. And lastly, maybe Karen, read just the last two verses of that psalm. And God searches me. 23 and 24.
Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test my thoughts. Point out anything you find in me that makes you sad, and lead me along the path of everlasting life.
Thank you. And the idea of the last two verses is God continues to search me in light of His promise to go with me, His promise of designing me, and He continues to search me to lead me in the way that He would His design, and is the idea behind that. As you look at the Hebrew, several of the Hebrew verbs that are in that psalm, wonderful openings come up in light of God's commitment to us. And it's a continual, it's present continuous searching is the idea. That God is always in the means of searching our hearts, testing us and trying us and purging us to help us to grab that unique design and follow the ways of Christ, the ways of God that He's designed us to follow. We've been created in the image and the likeness of God, and He's designed us to be responsive to His Spirit. And so that's sort of the idea of the passage as we set the stage. We've got four wonderful seats right up front, and the only way to get there is to come all the way around.
We disagreed on where it was or what time it was started.
Well, I want to know right off the bat, who was right?
I think I was.
Oh, okay. We'll talk more about that later. Good.
We don't have to keep looking for our
man. We're glad you made it. Let me ask you just to pencil in another little familiar passage to look at. And this time, it's in a very familiar passage to you in Ephesians, chapter 2, verse 10. And it has the idea here when Paul is talking here. He said, "We are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them." So part of our eternal providential destiny is not only as we look at our pilgrimage in Christ, the theme of our conference, but it's also our destiny and the providentialness of our being together this morning even, or being here this weekend together, even as we look at that. And so we'll look into this whole idea of growing in our understanding of this better in terms of our design and our desires or our purpose. And as we think about just this portion of it, the design portion, look with me at the idea behind this, and we'll only have time for a portion of this, is as a cube. And if this were to represent myself or you, what we're trying to do is to take a different facet of a cube and get a good picture, a particular picture of what that looks like. And then we'll look at it from another face of the cube and get still another picture of the way God's designed you. And then we'll look at still another facet of the cube and get a third picture of the way that God has designed you. And we have worked with over 1,500 of our staff across the country this year on this. And we take 2 full days to do this. So if you'll bear with us, we're going to fasten our seatbelts and roar through this today and tomorrow. But the idea behind that, and we'll be a resource to you on some of the others if we could ever do that in your areas at some time. So what we want to do is not to rely on any one face of this, which we often do, but we want to look at a composite of all of these faces and say, you know, this is the way that God's designed me. We looked at literally 25 or 30 psychometric assessments. And we've chosen a few because we feel, in light of that, of the direction that we're wanting to go and in equipping the laity and understanding ourselves in light of Scripture, there's only a few that are really, really helpful. And we're going to pick out a few of those this morning to get our hands around and tomorrow morning to look at. So the first thing we'll look at is preferences. You worked on that last night. Tomorrow morning we'll jump in and look at our spiritual gift cluster, and we'll decide at the end of our time whether you want homework tomorrow night. If you want homework tomorrow night, we'll be able to do both of these. If you don't want homework, we'll do half of our time doing it here, and then we'll spend the other half of time talking about it, and we'll give you this to take home with you, which itself, you can self-administer that. So we'll need to make another decision before we leave on that. So the idea is we'll certainly cover these. I would just simply like to comment on this one from the Bible and leave you with a seed thought to pursue when you go home in light of your sphere of service. It's a good biblical-based concept of the new covenant that needs to be clearly planted and firmly allowed to grow firmly and rooted in Christ. And we need to look at that. And part of it, it has to do with the providential aspect, but others of it has to do with my design and my desires. So let's dive in and look at, let me make a couple of comments now regarding just this one that we're going to dive into this morning. And then we'll bring Daryl on and let him lead you actually through the heart and essence of that. When we talk about this particular instrument, the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator that we've used to help you assess your preferences, you need to know that it is, in fact, the most widely used psychometric assessment in the world. It's cross-culturally validated. It's re-standardized every 3 years. Whereas your typical IQ test that's given across the country for your school children, the last time it was re-standardized and validated was 22 years ago. Enormous costs have gone into keeping this current, contextualized, and relevant. And it's one of the main reasons that we've chosen this particular assessment. keep in mind as we go through this that all psychometrics assessments, regardless of what, at best, provide supplemental, not conclusive information. These are, what we're talking about is indicators, not identifiers. It is descriptive and not prescriptive. The only thing that's prescriptive is this. This is true in counseling. Keep that in mind. Counseling at best is descriptive. Only this is prescriptive. And so as we look at that, that's the perspective that we're moving in. We're simply looking at your preferences. And what we're talking about is, would everybody pick up something and hold it up? I don't care if it's a book or what. Just hold it up. Okay, now. You had a preference. You picked that up with your right hand or your left hand. Ralph's left hand. Many of your right hand. There's more lefties in here. And so you can put that down. The idea here was that you made a preference when you picked that up. And your preference, you made decisions as you scored that. And basically what we're going to do is to pull those preferences together and codify it and crystallize it in such a way that it'll be helpful to you. That's all we've done. So these are preferences that we're looking at about the way that that God has designed us. And there are two kinds of psychometric instruments. One kind is heuristic and the other is non-heuristic. And when we think about heuristic, basically what we're talking about is leading to the discovery of patterns and designs. And so the Myers-Briggs type indicator is a heuristic instrument that leads us to patterns. We've got one more seat over here. You found your wife. Isn't that wonderful? It is a heuristic aspect, and you need to look at it in terms of the MBTI as a moving picture, whereas some of the psychometric assessments are more of a snapshot or a point in time. And the Myers-Briggs type indicator deals more with orientations. The Hebrew word in the Old Testament would be bent. Train up a child in the way he will go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. It has to do train up a child in his bent, the way God's designed him. And so we don't train every child the same way, nor do we disciple every person the same way. Their bents, their orientations, their preferences, that's what we're talking about here. And it's a moving picture from birth, and we develop that all the way through. Their patterns. Whereas a snapshot, some of the other psychometric assessments are more of a non-heuristic or a snapshot that generally are all compared against a norm, other people, circumstances. They tend to be situational, and they can also change very quickly. So what we're looking at here is more of a who you are. It's your bent. It's your orientation. It's your preferences. Keep in mind here that they are your preferences, and they can change in degree, but seldom in kind. So you could say, oh, well, this year I'll be an extrovert. Next year I may be an introvert. And it, no. It'll change in degree, but not in kind. Seldom. And the reason for that is if it were a snapshot assessment, yeah, we could get changes based on relationships, circumstances, whatever, the snapshot at that moment. You see the difference? Okay. So one of the reasons that we like the Myers-Briggs type indicator, let me just mention four, and then I'll bring Daryl on here. It is so widely used. It's cross-cultural. It's re-standardized. Secondly, it accommodates the reality of growth and change in normal adults. We'll get more into that later. Thirdly, it recognizes the reality of design in individuals and the need to function best according to that design. And we see so many people in wrong fits, so frustrated because they try to do something they're not designed or fit to be. And oftentimes in groups like this, as we've gone around the country doing this with adults all across the country, one situation I remember where one of the guys would say, go through one of the assessments and say, honey, this is just fine. She'd say, yeah, honey, that's you. They'd go through the next assessment and he'd say, honey, this is
She said, okay, this is not me. She said, yeah, I
love
you. And by the time we got to the 7th or 8th one, everybody was sitting in the group, she said, honey, I this is not me. And everybody in the group said, yeah, that's you.
Oftentimes, your spouse or a close friend will give you a very realistic assessment of yourself. And so as we go through this, you'll need to say, this is the way I see me. You need to turn somebody to know you and say, hey, is this what you're saying? We'll keep ourselves honest in that process. Finally, it helps you to understand what is there, the way God's designed you, providing information in a non-judgmental fashion. But it's codified in such a way that you can talk and communicate. One of the great needs. It gives us a basis and a common denominator there. In terms of right fit, what we're talking about is a right fit in the body of Christ so that we can make our contribution, bringing convergence on our life for all of our experiences, all of our background, our development, so that at a point in time we bring convergence on life for the purpose of contribution. And so when we talk about right fit, we're talking about contribution in the context of opportunity. And you'll have unlimited opportunities. You need to know who you are and where God wants you to minister. What's your sphere of service? Your field of service, one translation says. Another sphere of service. We'll look at that in a minute here. One presupposition you need to understand, and we'll discuss this toward the end of Daryl's time here, I trust, in the form of any questions you might have. But in your maturing process, you should seek to contribute in the area of your preferences, your gifting, and your strengths. Do what God's designed you to do, and you will find yourself much more content, and everybody around you will just enjoy and benefit from the contribution. It's the reason God gave us gifts. It's the way He's designed us. That's part of the presupposition. Get a right job and a right contribution for the kingdom on the basis of your gifts, strengths, preferences, and abilities. However, on your development side as an individual, when you continue to mature, 90% of all of your adult growth after the age of 30 comes through developing your weaknesses. Prior to 30, it comes through developing your strengths, abilities, gifts, etc. You just need to know that's true. And what happens is, you've often heard of a strength that becomes a weakness. If you just continue to develop just your strength, it becomes like sauerkraut or kimchi if you're from Korea, whatever. It's stout stuff. And your strength becomes so developed that it comes around full circle and hits you in the back of the neck. And you're good at what you do, but you have a narrow contribution expected. The more you develop in the area of your weaknesses, the greater the breadth of your contribution. You see the idea? So one deals with contribution, right fit, preferences, gifts, abilities, strength. But when it comes to development, we need to look at the area of weaknesses, the area of secondary aspects, in order to get a greater contribution.
Would you make that statement again on so much percent of your time after 30 is spent?
After the age of 30, 90% of your learning comes in development. Real development comes in the area of weakness. Growth development. And this is in keeping, this whole concept, with the body of Christ, isn't it? No one of us has all the gifts. We need to learn to rely on one another, not be the macho, independent. We need each other desperately. You're stuck with me and I'm stuck with you. And we need each other badly, and it's capturing that. Daryl, let me bring you on, and we'll catch a couple of those things later as we can.
Yeah. We're using this chair?
I was not.
Okay, maybe. I guess it goes around your neck here, huh? The only exception I would say, as we think about that, The growth in terms of the areas that are not your strengths are in some ways connected to the idea of that you understand your strengths. In other words, if you do not understand them well, then over the age of 30, you probably still are developing. That's what we want to try to help you with as much as we can, that you have good understanding of what your strengths are and how God has sovereignly designed you. And as Terry mentioned, that is one of the things that we've looked at more and more, is there are just some things that God has done in all of our lives. He's put us in certain families of which we had no control over, our brothers, our sisters, moms and dads, uncles and aunts, the part of the country we live in, the type of personality that develops from all of that. Our thought is that's God's sovereign work in our lives. And it's always for purposes that He has in mind. And to learn to really appreciate that. One of the things we've done with our staff this year, is we've gone around to we've been to about 1,300 or 1,500, over 1,500 staff, is that we've often asked them as we've got together in a group like this, what biblical character do you most identify with? And it's really interesting, even though we have a tremendous staff, often in a group like this, and I suspect if we did this here, we won't this morning because of time, we often identify with people's weaknesses. In fact, I would say, 7 or 8 out of 10 that would share in a group, we would identify with Peter in his weakness, or Moses in his weakness, or whatever it is. And that's where we often see ourselves, and that's accurate of us. But we also need to understand how God has sovereignly given us strengths and gifts and abilities that He really wants to use. And as Terry said, the way we're operating and coming to understand that is how God has made us is consistent with what He wants us to do. And to try to bring that together, and that we make our best contribution to the work of the kingdom when we're operating within those gifts and abilities. Let me pass out a helpful thing here. Terry just went through it, but this will give it to you in written form, and you can just kind of pass that around and share with each other. But those are just some of the same, they record some of the same things that Terry just mentioned, and we won't go back through those again, but those will be helpful to you just as you read and you move forward in that. Myers-Briggs, we do like, I don't think Terry mentioned this, I might mention, one of the reasons we like it, I like it, is because, and I mean this in a positive way, it's valueless. It doesn't put a value on one personality over another kind of personality, which often these kind of instruments do. We've used several through the years with the navigators, and often, again, the feeling is one is kind of better than the other. And that's one of the things that we hope as we minister not only to our staff but to the body of Christ as the Lord allows, that people will come to understand that the uniqueness of how God has made them is to be fully appreciated. There is kind of an underlying desire in many of our lives to be like somebody else. And there are certainly qualities in other person's lives that and their faith that we want to emulate. But God has created you uniquely to do unique things. And so that's part of the background that by which we're operating in this. This is, again, some of the tools that we've used with our staff as we've gone around the country. We thought it would be particularly helpful for you in your development, in your own life, and in your career process, particularly as husband and wives. I think that's been one of the beauties of this time is seeing husband and wife come to understand each other better. Not that Bill or Mary are just different, but why are they different? And learning to appreciate that having to do with God's sovereignty. And I think this will help you a little bit. It certainly has helped all of us. I think it helps us understand the rest of our family, even our children and our friends. I think it helps us understand things in ministry as to why people don't respond the same way we do. I came to Christ through one verse. I mean, the Lord used one verse particularly to kind of clarify things for me to say yes and follow Christ. After that, I shared that verse with everybody. I never saw anybody come to the Lord through that verse. I don't know if any of you have done that or not, but that's the way it appealed to me. And part of that I understand now is because of the kind of personality I am. It's John 10:10. I'm come that you might have life and that you might have it abundantly. That's what I was looking for. No question about being a sinner. No question where I was going. What is life about? But when you go through the Myers-Briggs, I understand that now because that's the kind of personality I am. I look for a big picture of what life is about. But most of the people that I shared with after that were not looking for that. I'd have been better to use the Roman road or something else and because it just didn't mean that to them the way it did to me. helps us to understand people and perhaps why we're missing them with the gospel, why we're missing them in friendships, because they are just coming from a different place. Let me describe the Myers-Briggs to you a little bit as best we can. It's what they call a bipolar usage, and they break this into 8 categories, and they say you're in one of these as opposed to the other. You're more in one than opposed to the other. And this will help you as we go through just to understand that. As Terry probably said, it's not that I don't use my left hand, but my preference is my right. Now, the only thing that may stymie you in this is that some of you, because you took this so quickly, really may not have put your preferences. If you didn't, you won't fully get out of this what you should. I would suggest you even go back and erase it and take it all over again if you want to. But you really need to put what your preferences are, not what somebody else thinks you ought to do. Because you won't understand yourself if you put what somebody else thinks you ought to do. You really need to come to understand yourself for good or bad. You may not like what you've got there, but at least you'll understand yourself. And that's what we want to help you to do. So I hope you felt the freedom to do that last night. And again, even as we are going to be working with boxes, we're not trying to put you in a box. You may find yourself in more in one than in the other. But basically, this is the way they approach it in the Myers-Briggs. They have what they call the extroversion or introversion. Now, as I go through this, you'll have to really be open to changing your understanding a little bit of what these mean. As Westerners, we have certain definitions, but that was not the original intent of these words. So if you could drop some of your definition. Extroversion means, this is where you, use this pen, this is really where you get your energy. That's a key word. It's just where you're energized. What really energizes you? Are you energized by the exterior world of people and things and events? Or are you energized by the interior world where of ideas and thoughts, and you prefer to be alone and think through things? A party, for instance, if an extrovert goes to a party, almost all occasions they'll be very energized by the party, love it, they'll come away just as excited and energized as they were at the beginning. An introvert will often go to a party, and about halfway through, that's about all they can handle. They've been enough with people as they can be. They need to go and kind of reflect and be by themselves and think about things. Another way to look at an extrovert is an extrovert, in terms of the way they do things, is they do, think, and then do. Sometimes as extroverts, we do not think, and we do again. But that's the basic pattern. We do think, and we do. An introvert thinks, then he does, and then he thinks. Just kind of where you start from. Where do you get your energy from? And again, you're probably not all of one or all of another, but you have a preference. Do you really gain your energy by being by yourself, thinking about ideas, or do you really gain your energy from the outside world? I'm an extrovert, and one of the things about extroverts too, extroverts will tell you exactly where they are at that moment, but don't count on that being the long-range view of things. They process out loud. An introvert thinks about things first, and then they start to share with you. You usually get really good stuff from an introvert because they've thought it through. But the extrovert, if you go away thinking that's where they are, that is not where they are. That's just where you left the conversation. They are still processing. So if you don't know what an extrovert is thinking, you aren't listening. If you don't know what an introvert is thinking, it's because you haven't asked. If you ask, they will tell you, and usually it's very good. Where do you gain your energy from? Okay. The second area is where do you gather information from? Where does information come to you from? Is it through your 5 senses, which they call being a sensor, or do you have that in terms of which God has given you, kind of the intuitive? Intuitive, we use the in here because we've used the I up here. Intuitive is the second phrase. Do you have kind of a sixth sense? Where you kind of have this gut feel about things, and that's the way you really gather information. A sensor, for instance, is very interested in the facts, the details, the present realities. They live right now. If you ask them something, they're going to ask you details about that. The intuitive kind of thinks about, they hear what you're saying in terms of gathering the information, but they think about where does that go? What is the future? What is the possibilities of that? Intuitives are always thinking about possibilities. Sensors almost always are thinking about right now. A sensor would say, you're a dreamer. And an intuitive would probably say to the sensor, you don't understand even where you're going. And we miss each other because, again, God is, in that sense, has given us different temperaments. Do you like to deal with realities right now? Do you gather information through your five senses? Or do you kind of see how all five of these connect and come up with something, which is the intuitive? Understandable? That's an intuitive or a sensor. How do you gather information? A third one, and I'll give you some more handwritten information on this in just a moment. A third one is how you make decisions. And do you make them in terms of what they call feeling, or do you make them in terms of thinking? The idea of the feeler is that the highest value for them is people. They have people values. Feeling doesn't mean emotions. It just means when they go to make a decision, values are the place they start. How will this affect Bill and Mary? How does this affect me? How's it going to affect things? This is the way they think. A thinker thinks, okay, if you do this, then you go to point two, point three. It's a logical process. That's the way they make decisions. So they move in terms of a logical process of doing that. They gather their information, make a logical decision.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't think so. A thinker makes logical decisions. A feeler makes decisions based on people values. Oh, you mean in terms of the which way it's on? It may be. That may be on that. This is not a...
Okay.
I wasn't putting it up there for that. I'm sorry. Just in terms of helping to understand the intent. I'm sorry, I missed your question. But that's the way you make decisions. How do you make decisions? This is the only, by the way, the only major difference between men and women is that women tend to make more people value decisions and men tend to make more thinking value decisions.
Huh?
They do not. They do not. And I may have this, let's see how the, yeah, I think, in fact, just to clear that up so you won't be confused by my markings, I'll even change that. But no, what you'll find yourself is you may be an extrovert with intuitive, with a thinker, and then, that's right, it's not a logical process.
Is there a difference between right and left brain with thinking?
There is some difference in terms of that, but we've not incorporated that as a strong element of Myers-Briggs. So, how do you make your decisions? Is it a normal thinking process, or again, is it with people values being the higher one? And then the last one is what you might call a lifestyle. Let me make sure I get that in the... Okay. And that has to do with what they call judging or perceiving. Now, again, by judging, they do not mean being judgmental. What they mean is you tend to like in your lifestyle a orderly lifestyle. You tend to like to bring closure to things. You want to make decisions and get on with it. A perceiver is just the opposite. They like to lay back, can deal a lot better with ambiguity, will put off decision making until they gather more information. They're always kind of gathering more information. If you're going on a vacation, a judger will want to know where you're going, what time are we going to get there, are the hotel reservations already made, do we have two beds in the room or one, where are we going to eat that night. They want to know all of that. They like an orderly planned lifestyle. A perceiver, that just spoils the whole thing. Let's just go and see what happens. That's what they like. They like an open lifestyle. So these are the eight categories. How you gather energy from the external world, from the interior world, how you gather information through your five senses or that hunch, that intuitive future possibilities, how you make decisions, a logical thinking process or people values, is that the primary way? What's your lifestyle? Is it one of being a judger or one of being a perceiver? Is that basically an understandable concept? Okay, let me give you some information that'll help you a little bit more. Hope we've got enough of these, by the way. If we don't, we were not planning on quite the size group that you are. You may have to share one as a husband and wife together. Let me mention this as this is going around. One of the things with preferences, Terry, I don't know if I've mentioned or maybe you did, but this is an important thing, is that your preferences and your behavior. Did I mention that earlier? Maybe not. Your preferences and your behavior is not the same thing. In fact, that's one of the things we want you to come to understand. You may be behaving in patterns that you've learned. They may be good or bad, but they're not your preferences. It's not the way you're sovereignly designed. You have certain things, and we all do that. We come from certain kind of families. You may be in a very structured situation where you don't have freedom to explore your preferences. Your marriage may be like that. The husband may be dominating, and the wife has not had the freedom to really come to understand really what her preferences are. And if so, if that's true in a marriage, then the husband in this case is really missing a great deal of what the wife has to offer to them as a couple and to their ministry. So it's not always that behavior and preferences are the same. They ought to be, but you will come to see that that's not true. Neither, when we get in tomorrow, sometimes your gifting is not true with what you're doing. Your experience and your gifting are different. And we want to try to help as much as we can within 3 hours to help you bring more correlation to that. Let me just run through these real quick. Does everyone have one? At least one? Okay. There's a few extra ones if anybody needs an extra one. We'll put them up here for you. Okay, there are some over there. Once you pass this. Again, how you're energized and stimulated by the outer world of people and things. The extrovert is expressive. They're action people. They're friendly, talkative. Usually easy to know. They express emotions. They really go after relationships. They have broad interests. They really like to live life. An introvert, the inner world of thoughts and ideas, reflective. Concentration is very important to them. Quiet, reserved often. Sometimes hard to know. They repress their emotions sometimes. They don't let you know what they're thinking. They're private people often. They have deep interests. They examine life. They would say a life worth living is a life that's been examined. They're always thinking, and boy, they're very, very sensitive people in terms of ideas and thoughts. Just the way that we're made. Again, how we gather information through the five senses. Facts, details, practical, concrete reality. They focus on the present. They like repetition. They deal from experience. They like routine. An intuitive, a sixth sense, they see concepts and patterns. They're often innovative and creative. They focus on the future. They're abstract. They're more random. They go on hunches. They embrace change. Now, let me share this. As we've gone through, Terry and I have been involved in trying to help a major change come about in our work over the past year and a half, which Terry will describe tomorrow night to some extent. We've gone out to be with all of our staff, and we'll be describing that because we felt there had to be a significant change that was coming about in the work having to do with how the world is changing, how America is changing, and some other things which I won't dwell on. But having said that, we've learned as we've gone out with our staff strongly are non-changers. Most of our staff, for instance, are S's. They do not like change, and there's another thing that's connected to it that shows they do not like change. We were kind of wondering why we were not making more progress in some areas, and this has helped us a lot. We have we're predominant in our staff that do not like to bring about change. And that's what we've been involved in this past year. The third one is how we make decisions. Do we decide on the basis of logic or on the basis of values? Logic has to do with being, again, objective, from the head as opposed to the heart with the feeler. They deal with things. They're often cool. They can be impersonal. They think about justice, what is right to do. They often analyze. They're very precise. A person who makes decisions on the basis of values, again, from the heart. People are very important to them, caring. They're very personal. Harmony is one of the great things they seek. They really can empathize with you. They're very persuasive. And again, I hope you see as we go through this how absolutely necessary all of these are. To have just people who made decisions on the basis of logic would be probably a cold ministry. In fact, Terry told me a statement a number of years ago that I've thought about many, many times, and it's really true. In fact, I don't remember if you even remember saying that to me, but probably back as far as early 70s. But we were chatting one day, and he said, you know, there's not much that's worse than a cold disciple maker. Someone who really is after disciple making, but they're really cold in the way they do it. There's not a warmth and affection and a love for people. And a person who is a thinker often has to learn how to do that. That's why the Lord has given Terry and I, we're both thinkers, wives who are very strong in that area, and three daughters each. I tell you, if you want development, three daughters can develop your life without question. And then the last one on judging and perceiving your lifestyle. How do people perceive you? What do you like about the way you want your life? Decisive, planned, orderly? You like closure? You like structure? You're goal-oriented? You like to meet deadlines? You plan, then you act? You like to complete tasks. You like to mark them off your list. Some of you have lists, don't you? You like to mark. Isn't it great just to mark things off your list? My wife and I make a list for my wife. She never makes one, but I'll make one for her. And we've been married 35 years, so we're probably going to make it, it looks like. But Volley and I have learned the difference between lists. Lists are things I plan to do today or this week. Lists are things Volley plans to do sometime. That's the difference, if at all. But we've learned to work with our weaknesses on these things as well. Lifestyle of the perceiver is flexible, adaptable, spontaneous. They're curious. They like lots of options. For instance, one of the things a perceiver will like, he may not want to commit themselves. We find this with students particularly, not just to one study. We want them to be in the Navigator study. They may want to be in four or five studies. They may want to do four or five things because they like options. That's a perceiver. A judger would probably decide just to be in one. One's great. Bring closure to that. Give them a whole self to that. Perceiver likes to do several things. Let's don't close this out too soon. They're process-oriented. They like discoveries. They love leisure. They act. And then they start a lot of tasks. Don't have quite as good a record of finishing tasks. But anyway, that we thought that might be helpful to you in just coming to understand some of that. We've got a couple of books we want to pass out to you as well. Let me just pass out. Let me give the other one, Terry. Let me just pass out the one book, and then we'll make the other one available for you at the end of the time. This is a book that Myers-Briggs puts out. It has a lot of good information for you. And you can have one copy each, and we'll give you one more. This is the type as it has to do with things having to do with organizational or business things. We're going to give you one that's personal as well. But you'll find that very helpful in as you go through that. I would particularly encourage you to look at pages 4 and 5. Maybe you can just turn one of those down or remember that. We won't take the time to do it this morning. Pages 4 and 5 are really helpful in coming to understand more about your type. Any questions, again, generally about the type idea? There are 16 of these, by the way, you'll see. When you combine these letters, there are 16 different types. And we'll give you little descriptions of each one of those types. And you'll probably find yourself more in one than in the other. Again, we're not trying to put you in a box. Often when you read this little description, which we'll give you, if you don't feel that's you, it's often the one right next to it. And sometimes because of how your scores go. So we want to give you back your material, if that's... Is that available, Katie?
Let's put a knife together.
Okay. This is Katie Cassing. Katie's done all the scoring on this, and she'll be available to us to help. She really knows more about this than Terry and I do. We get to be up front, but she really knows what's going on. So if you need to know anything about Myers-Briggs, Katie can tell you. Let me pass this back to you. Let me see if some of you know, just based on this brief description, as to what you are. It's be interesting just to see what your perceptions would be. By the way, hold that just from how many of you have taken this before? I should have asked that. A few of you. Okay, so you are somewhat familiar with it. You're going to have to help me with names here. Croak? Okay. Bill, you have any idea what you would be on this?
Boy, I tell you what. Extrovert.
You are an extrovert. That is one of them. And let's see. Karen Gould? Okay, Karen. What do you? Do you have any idea for who you?
Could go either way. Extroverted.
How about any of the other ones?
Judging, thinking.
I think you are on that one. See if you know all four of these. Some of you may know all four of these. Saller, George Saller?
Yeah, I'm right.
Okay, George. Oops.
I don't even
know. Okay, okay. I'll give it to you then, George. Okay, you got yours? Ed? Ligon?
Yeah.
Okay, Ed. You probably know yours, don't you, Ed?
ISTJ.
Yeah. ISTJ. Let's see if that's you. It's a little different.
A little different.
A little different. Okay. Randy?
Yes.
Okay. Good. What do you have any thoughts, Randy?
Yeah, it's either ESTJ or EX. It's pretty equal.
It's ES. You're right. Okay. John Sitterquist? Okay, John. Okay. You have thoughts?
I think I'd probably be an ISFP.
You're exactly right. Some of you have got yourself figured out. Beverly?
ISFJ.
Exactly. Okay. Colon. Okay. Thoughts?
INTJ.
Exactly. Right on it. You guys are great. Virginia?
Yes.
Johnston?
Yes, right.
Okay, Jenny? Okay, is that you?
ESFJ.
You're right. Boy, 100% here. Okay. Kenneth Goodyear? Okay, Ken?
ESFJ.
Okay, 2 out of 4 is not bad. Okay. That's right. Diane?
Introversion, feeling, and perceiving.
Okay, you got those three right. All three of those you mentioned. Okay. Sally Ann Wilson? Okay. Oops, Sally Ann. Okay. Thoughts?
Introversion, sensor, feeler, and judger.
You're absolutely right. Okay. Holly?
ESFJ.
3 out of 4. 3 out of 4. Okay. John Hughes? John? Okay.
I'm an ISTJ married to an ENFP.
IST. Well, the last one is different. Okay. Okay. Thompson?
Yes.
Okay. Cheers.
ENFP.
Exactly. Got it figured. Okay. Michael? Hit? Height? Okay, Michael. Okay, good. You know?
We're just telling.
3 out of 4. Okay. And Linda? Okay. Three out of four. I think maybe the last one wasn't that. Barbara? Comer? Okay. What do you think?
I have no idea.
Okay. Now you do. Okay. And Ronald?
Right here, yes.
Okay. You know what yours is?
Yeah, I'm an EISNTFPJP.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Some of us tomorrow will be ESPNs, won't we? Jan? Where am I? Here, right here. Okay. Sorry about that. Do you know?
IN
2 out of 4. Okay. Ralph?
ESTJ.
3 out of 4. Okay. That's very good. Sharon Bell?
Okay.
Okay.
ENFP?
Exactly. You got it figured. Hubert?
ENFP.
What is it?
ENFP.
You got it. Okay. Rosalind Walker? Okay, Rosalind? What do you think? Okay, okay. Okay. Larry? Larry Walker? You bet. Mm-hmm. This is Larry's, okay. Ann Egbert? Okay, Ann? What do you think?
ISFJ.
Yeah, 3 out of 4. Okay. Robert?
ISTJ.
3 out of 4. All right, you're right on that. Okay. Beth Owen? Beth? What was it?
ESTJ.
Exactly. Sorry. Rob?
ESO.
Exactly. Can't reach any further with this cord, I'm sorry. Linda Allen? What do you think, Linda?
I think
ISTJ. I what?
ISTJ.
Okay, 3 out of 4. Brian?
EIST.
Yes. That's the way you, at least that's the way you answer the questions. That's it. Okay. Suzanne Osborne? Okay. What do you think, Suzanne? Okay, 2 out of 4. Uh-huh. David?
ENFP.
2 out of 4. So. Okay. At least that's the way the questions. Bob Barter? Bob? Okay. Is it Barter?
It's Laura. Laura there, but me, Bob.
Okay, right. Yours is what, you think?
I haven't a clue.
Okay. Okay. Laura, what do you think?
There are more things here.
Exactly.
Intuitive.
Oops, excuse me, I'm sorry.
But I am.
Okay. John?
I think last one.
What do you think?
Probably. Well, ETJ, I know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you asked us what you got. Pat?
Yes,
you got it. Okay. Evelyn Hobson? Evelyn? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think, Evelyn? Exactly. Okay. Gilbert?
Yes,
exactly. You guys got that figured, yeah? Okay. This is a mess. On the back side of your sheet that lists your type, you'll see those 16 boxes. And those are, again, just real brief descriptions of that particular type. You may want to read that and see again, and maybe again his husband's wife. Does it kind of read out with you? Do you kind of agree with the type? Now, again, as I said, these are based on your answers. You may not have fully answered in terms of who you are. But this is the description based on your answers. Just saying this is your preference. In your books, by the way, that we gave out to you, they're also kind of full-page descriptions in the back of the book that describe those different types. It starts on page 16 and runs through the end of the book. That gives you a lot more information about those particular type that you are. So let me get you to look at the little boxes or read the one around it. And then I want to go back and share one more thing with you, which will help you as well. Let me encourage you to do this. Here's an exercise you can do if you want to, barring Hubert's for just a moment. You've got some scores on this page. You see this page right here? You've got some scores up top that tell you something about yourself. The ones that are most important are the one called points. Points, in a sense, kind of show your spread. Okay. For instance, in Hubert's, he is an E. He's an extrovert. He has 17 in terms of his score, but he also has 8 concerning his introversion. That means he has a high need for introversion as well. You could, with 17 and 8, you could say it this way. Out of 25 days, Hubert will act more like an extrovert than an introvert. 17 days of that. The other 8 days, he'll need introversion. And we all do. In fact, I'm finding the older I get, I need more introversion. I need more time to reflect and think. And so you do change concerning some of those point spreads. You may want to take, if you've got a different kind of pencil or something, you may want to take this particular paper and below the scoring, which the scoring on this paper comes from the block on the right, one that is called reference scores. By the way, you can't add these scores together. They're graded on a curve. So there's no use trying to add them together. They have a special kind of grading they do. That just tells you your points. But in your, preference scores. But in your points, you may want to do something like with a red pencil and take again Hubert scores and go out to a 17 here and then an 8 over there. Just to show your own spread about what you like. That's often helpful. So you'd have a 17 on this side and an 8 on this side. That might be something interesting to do. I've done that. I think it's very helpful just so you get to see the spread of things. Because we're usually not one way or the other. Now, if you are one way or the other, you're almost off the chart on one of these. There's nothing significantly wrong with that. The major thing about it is you will have a really probably difficult time understanding the person on the other side. You are so strong in your preference. If you're up above 30, 35, 40, then you have a very strong preference. And if you're, for instance, if you're an intuitive and you're you have a 40 on intuitive, you'll have a very difficult time understanding a person who's a sensor. And you have a hard time appreciating a person who's a sensor. So you want to look for that. Now, some of you will have scores that kind of go right down the middle of the page. Your scores are very close. That could mean one of two things. Well, probably even several things, but one of two I'll mention. One is it means that you may be very well balanced. In other words, you don't have real strong preferences. Your lifestyle has become one where you just have good balance. You can go either way. Doesn't matter a lot to you. Your preferences are not that strong. Yes, you choose the right hand, but you can use the left hand pretty good. Now, that doesn't mean that balance is the best thing. Sometimes a person who is very dominant makes a unique contribution in that. It's not that you're striving for balance, necessarily, but it may tell you that you are a balanced person. The other thing it might tell you, you've not developed preferences. For whatever set of reasons, you've not had the freedom, the time, the desires to develop your preferences. Now, this can often happen for a wife when almost from the time they get married, children come along and they're serving three or four children plus a fifth one being the husband, and they just do not have time to develop their preferences. Often wives can develop their preferences later in life just because of the seasons that happen. I would say my wife began to develop some things that we would now call this probably in about mid-30s. When we just begin to work on that. In fact, we made a decision when she was about 35 that we were going to work on her development over my own, which was a major decision for us. I think we realized there was nowhere for me to go, so let's develop her, or whatever it was. But we really did make a major decision that we were going to develop the skills and abilities that she had. And that was, as Vali would tell you, that was a major decision that we made. So, but anyway, that'll help you to understand that. It may be balance if you have scores that are close. It may be that you really need to think about how to develop these preferences. And as husband and wife, you may want to talk about that. Wives handle the sensing elements far better than the intuitive elements. They're better often in handling the finances than a husband who is an intuitive, or vice versa. Sometimes the wives don't know how to develop these areas, and these are things that the husband and wife need to talk about how to do that. So just to help you a little bit on your scores. You have other questions about your scores or your preferences in here? Yes, uh-huh. Very. Yeah, in fact, I would say if you're kind of uncomfortable with, as you think back on it now, whether you really put your preferences or not, and then you read the little description, and you're not sure, one of the things you could do, we could help you with, if you would, we can give you back your thing, you can just erase it and do it all over again, we'll regrade it for you. Because again, what you really want is who you really are and discover that. Colin? Yes. They're more extended? Well,
they're more stretched.
Okay. Yeah, well, that means that in that period of time, it means that you have developed your preferences much stronger. You've either had a sense of freedom about it, or you've understood them and you're developing. One of the things that, as an example, I have always been told about myself by people in a complimentary way, you must be a very detail-oriented person. I've always wondered about that because I've never thought of myself as a detail-oriented person. I mean, important things, yes, but generally details begin to bore me after about 2 minutes. I just can't handle them. So I've always wondered why people perceive me that way. I'm actually an intuitive. And I think the more I've discovered about that, my preference in this area has grown that I like to think about the future. I don't like to think so much about the details of today. But where the people were perceiving it is that I like a orderly lifestyle. I like things in order. Vali and I have a different view of the house. Vali views the house in terms of cleaning the house that when I, the day I'm due back is the good day to do it. But in between the time I've left for those 5 days, things are great. But she knows that I like an orderly situation, so that fifth day is a good day to vacuum or whatever goes on. But if I didn't come back for 2 weeks, I have no idea what the situation would be. But it's in the judging that I like. I'm not detail. I am intuitive. Now, since I've learned that, and the reason I mentioned that, I've really developed this area because that is really me. That's what I think about. I like to think about the possibilities of what's going to happen. I was, when we had the U.S. leadership team, I was on the team with a fellow that some of you know, Ray Ho. I'm an intuitive and Ray's a sensor. When Terry would ask in a meeting, what was that decision we made last time, or some idea like that, I would say, well, you know, it seems like to me, and I would share a couple of three sentences that had to do with the essence of what happened. Now, what Ray would say is, yeah, that was true, but here are the 5 points that we made in that, and here are the 3 points under each one of those. And I'm sitting there thinking, where in the world did he get that? I don't even remember it, but it just comes out like that. The beauty of that is when we need that kind of information, as an intuitive, I need to give deference to Ray, because Ray has that information. So one of the key things about the Myers-Briggs is learning to give deference to one another, because we're much stronger in certain areas. And learning how to do that is a real mark of growth, particularly for a husband and wife. To really learn to do that. Let me give you a little some other things about the scores or anything. Excuse me, I've occupied yours so much there. Anything else about the scores, the scoring idea? Let me give you a couple of other things that will be interesting to you. Because you may want to see where you are in relationship to the rest of our country. I'll let you pass that out. I've got an overhead, but I think we'll just use what we've got here. These are the 16 groups, as you can see in this form when it comes your way. How's it going? Let me give you another minute or so to get out there. This just captures a lot of broad categories. And you can find yourself on here. Let me give you some general thoughts out of this. Up in the left-hand corner, where you see the ISTJ, ISFJ, those types are the most rigid types. They're the most inflexible types. They're the ones who do not like change a whole lot. What do you see up in the left-hand corner, all the way to the top? Navigators. The ISTJ is the dominant type within the framework of the NAVS. So as you think, as we tried to bring about some element of change, we are working against the grain, so to speak. The most rigid type. The types in the middle, the ISFP, INFP, the two below, the E's, are the most gentle types. I think that's where, Kitty helped me, isn't that where most often nurses, doctors come in the gentle types? Is that, was that the correlation? Do you remember?
I think it's the ESFP.
ESFP, okay. ESFP is one of those, is where most doctors come from. The other type, again, you can see down at the bottom of the NAVS, is that we're ESTJs also. So we're introverts and extroverts, but those are the two dominant types. Most women in the country in terms of type are ESFJs. See that down to the bottom. Doesn't mean there's anything difficult about that if you're a fella in that, but it's just that most women are. Most Americans are on the left-hand side of the chart. That means we're mainly feelers and sensors, I think. Yeah, mainly feelers and sensors. We like data, facts as part of it. Over to the bottom on the right-hand side, the ENFP, ENFJ, etc., are the people who express the most freedom, need the most freedom. We'll fight you for the most freedom. They're more the creative types. The ENTJ is considered the most natural leaders, in terms of just the way God has sovereignly designed them. By the way, most of the leaders in the country in terms of business or government or whatever come from the four corners. Doesn't mean someone else cannot be leading, but that's where most leaders come from. And most American men are the ESTJs, as you can see over on the bottom left. So just some helpful thoughts for you in terms of where the country is in relationship to that. Let me give you one on communication. This is an interesting little chart as well on how to communicate with people that in terms of the way they gather information or make decisions, these in here, how do you approach them? As I mentioned earlier, as an intuitive, I was using John 10:10, probably but should have been using something else with different people than just that one verse. So when you're presenting or you're influencing or you're explaining something to somebody, the feeler is the way to approach them. That's down to the bottom right-hand side. Tell who else is for the idea. That's very important to them. Be personable and friendly. Indicate how it's helpful. Say it's the right thing to do. Tell why it's valuable. Those are things that are of interest to them. For the thinker over on the left-hand side, be logical. State the principles involved. Stress competent handling of issues. Competence, by the way, is a very important issue to people who are on that right-hand side of the 16 quadrants there. Competence, very important. Stress competence and handling of issues. Be well organized, moving logically from point to point. List the cost and the benefits. That's the way to really approach them because that's what they respond to. In terms of that, you can see the sensor and the intuitive as well. The intuitive, paint the global scheme. Don't let opportunity pass. You need to strike now. Use confidence and enthusiasm. Indicate the challenges. The intuitives are very motivated by challenges. Point out the future benefits. That is how that they respond when you're dialoguing with them. On the back is another little captured thing. You should... your type should be in each one of these categories. They're just little descriptive words to help you think about yourself. Let's see. Holly, would you mind if I used you as an example?
No,
I guess I should. Okay, no one will. What is your type?
ENFJ.
Okay, help me find that in each one of these. ENFJ. EJ is the top one there, the decisive extrovert. Ian, what would you be in the second one? NF, you'd be enthusiastic, insightful. And the third one? SP? Is it SP? Is that what you are? Okay, SJ then what you are. You're a realistic decision maker? NJ. Okay, you're a visionary decision maker. And then you can just follow that through. You should be in every category by combining two of those. If you have an underliner or something, you may want to just underline those. Those are just some helpful descriptions of people who fall in these kind of types. Now, just a word of thought. Because you're a INTJ does not mean that an INTJ sitting right beside you, that you guys are just alike. It does not mean that at all. It just means that in terms of preferences, you kind of have some same interests. You kind of move in the same direction, but you may be quite different in your personalities. Let me pass out some more. You're going to get more information today than you'll probably know what to do with, but... this is a little paper on appreciation according to type or temperament. And And you can find yourself in this when you, as this goes around. By the way, this is interesting to think about in terms of your children, as to where your children are. They don't, with this particular instrument we're using, they don't suggest that you put heavy merit in it with children below the age of 30, because most people begin to, many people have not developed their strengths until that age. But it does give you some indication sometime. And we've done it with our 17-year-old, and I think we've it's been really helpful to her. But these are the things that people appreciate according to temperament. For a censor and judger, praise for a product, product orientation, employers who value carefulness, caution, thoroughness, accuracy, commendation for their loyalty, responsibility, industriousness. They want appreciation, but not likely to show their pleasure in receiving it. What does a censor judger not like? A deadline's not being met. Why is that? Why does a censor judger not like deadlines not being met? Based on what I've shared with you up here. Yeah, they want closure. They have a high need for closure. And a person's not using standard operating procedure. You go by the book. They don't appreciate it unless you do those kind of things. An intuitive feeler down the middle of the page, for instance. Personal expression of appreciation. Recognition as a unique person making unique contributions. Having feelings and understanding and ideas understood by others. What they don't appreciate is impersonal treatment. The intuitive thinker. Being appreciated for their capabilities and ideas. Someone is competent or more competent appreciating them. They really respond to that. What they don't respond well to or appreciate is routine tasks done well. They're not interested in routine tasks. Things which violate logic, reason, or principle. Rules, traditions, or biases getting in the way of maximum results. Those are things they don't appreciate. We were chatting with a couple that's in our Bible study the other right before Christmas. And he is a thinker, she is a feeler in terms of their this idea. They were out walking and evidently had gone through an area where there were some low-hanging trees, but not that low. And somehow she had hit the tree right in here in her head and really knocked her down. And his first response was, "How in the world did you do that? I mean, it's not even logical. The tree is higher than you are." And she's laying there, you know, with this bruise on the head, and he's trying to figure out in a logical manner how that happened, you know. And it was things which violate logic or reason or principle, and so we're working with them on their marriage. So it's, but that's an area of appreciation, just how people appreciate things. Item number 42 coming your way. This also is a little block chart that helps you understand. These are just some ideas they captured, which kind of fit well with the descriptions on the back of your report form that we gave you. And these are, again, not absolutes by any stretch of the imagination, just some ideas about your type, and they have little one-liners and then some things under it. We did this not too long ago with the person who's responsible for all the food services at the Glen that we've been enjoying these last days. Take a random look around and see which one that you think he might be concerning not just his type, but the little title that goes with it. Anybody can... He just fitted so well, it just kind of stood out to me when he did it. It's right down on the bottom, the second one from the left. That's his type. As he did it, he didn't even know this, but he is a ESFJ, a host and hostesses of the world. And so it just really fit. You know, when he looks at that, he was so surprised. But again, that may not be a complete description of of you, but it might give you some ideas. Again, from the corners, ISTJ doing what should be done. They're the most responsible of the group. ISFJ has a high sense of duty. They're the most loyal. INFJ, an inspiration to others. They're the most contemplative. INTJ, everything has room for improvement. They're always thinking about how to change things. The most independent. And you can just see all the way down. So I thought this might be a helpful little chart just to give you some more insights. And again, should be compared to the one on the back of your chart. Let me stop for a moment and just see if there's some questions or ideas or thoughts you might want to address to Terry and Katie and myself that we could help you with. We want to give some more time for you to dialogue with each other as well. Do we go to 10:30? 10:15? Okay, we're closing in on it. Well, that's right. That's right. In fact, we've discovered more ESPNs and the Navigators than any other type. You know? Is there anything about understanding or capturing some of these ideas that?
Couples took a vacation together a year ago, and just it was absolute disaster. And I took them through the MBTI, and they had just absolutely laughed themselves to death, understanding why they reacted. There was one couple that you know wanted everything planned out, and they went to California, just the details of it, and the other one just wanted to head west. And so they had conflicts for 10 days. And so after understanding that, they're going to take a vacation together again this year to see what the differences are. And because they understand that, they can defer to one another. And they're sort of excited about experiencing it.
Yes, sir.
With this information, I think it's very interesting. I think it's helpful. Is there any correlation to compatibility in the people?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Compatibility.
Oh, in terms of... Well, there's some correlation, obviously. I think particularly in the area of learning to understand and appreciate the differences. As you probably have heard said, it's one thing to understand the differences, quite another thing to appreciate them. And I think that's something that we have a desire for with our staff, would certainly want to encourage you, and that you learn to really appreciate that and develop it in one another. There are a lot of other factors, of course, that have to do with compatibility, but I think one of the things, again, is just the just learning how why the differences are there. Not that a person is contrary or stubborn, but if you really understand their preference, that's probably the way God has sovereignly designed them.
Sounds like these two couples will find out.
Yeah. By the way, there's on all of these 16 types or so, there's one type is no better than the other. People often ask, well, is one more sinful? No, as far as I can tell, they're all sinful, you know, because they involve us. Now, if there's something in our preferences that is not in according to Scripture, then Scripture needs to speak to that, and of course we need to change. But that's true for any of us. I mean, I'm an ENTJ, and there's plenty of sin in that, in every one of them, in learning how to live with those, and again, learning how to give deference to one another. Yes, Colin?
You did mention deference, and that's, I think it's important not just to give lip service to it, but to really understand what is deference, what am I, what is she,
It really is in keeping with the body concept of the gifts that we need each other and referring to one another, a lot of gifts that both of us can appreciate. There's just a lot of biblical principles and concepts that are manifested in the second or two out there.
Has anybody taken this any further and found out that, you know, I do the letters, but like top corner and bottom corner are most compatible? I mean, is there any graph of who's most compatible? That's kind of what you're looking at. And what types have the most opportunity for success in a relationship?
Jack Mayhall may speak to that in his book. He's just written a, he and Carol have just written a book called Opposites Attack. And I think Jack may deal with it in that as to, that would be, of course, information you'd like to have for your children. Don't know where we'd go with it for information for us if we find out we're incompatible, but it would be great information to have for your children. But we've not. Jack's book may be helpful in that area.
It does have to do with God having brought us together as couples now, and we need to look at that in light of spouses together, in light of our overall purpose and mission and our unique contributions. They will not buy it. They will be in concert with one another in terms of our contribution and who we are. If we're very, very different, our purposes and expressions need to find itself. And it's not wrong or right. It's just we need to capture of that and have a deep appreciation for the uniqueness and the breadth of what God can do. On the other side, there's a where we're very, very similar. There's aspects of companionship in that way where friendship and enjoying similar things. And we have to be careful that we appreciate. So there are multiple aspects of that, but they do correlate with our overall purpose and contribution as a couple.
Again, I think learning about each other from a standpoint of, if you could say it this way, having some objective information, not just kind of I don't understand why you think that way, but really having more. Bobby and I have been married, as I mentioned earlier, 35 years, and I think this has even pushed new dimensions, new understanding for us as to our differences, how to appreciate those differences, how to use one another, how to give deference. When Bali just does something far better than I do, which is quite a bit, and let her do that. Let her be the take the point in terms of doing that. Yes, someone had their hand there.
Terry mentioned earlier preferences and behavior, and they're not the same. Like you said, necessarily the same as you said. Is it desirable that our behavior becomes more in tune with our preferences?
It is. It is because, again, what we're sharing with you today concerning, again, if there's not sin involved, or we're not using it badly, if God has given you certain preference in terms of His sovereign creation, He's given you certain gifting, then you need to have consistent with that in that because that's where you make your best contribution.
It's also an issue, too, of maturity oftentimes and skillfulness as we develop in recognizing that and not having had opportunities either through a job, an assignment, or circumstances. So, but it is desirable to...
Just a thought, too, and this is only that, but if one is not operating within the framework of their preferences, you have to operate a long time. Like, for instance, as I mentioned, Terry and I were traveling all around the country last year. Much of what both of us were involved in, which neither one of us are, is what is having to use the five senses to do things. A lot of details, a lot of work that we used here. I operate a lot right in here. At the end of the year, both of us were almost burned out because we operated out of our strengths. You operate out of your strengths for a long time and concerning your preferences, I think burnout is a real reality. A lot of introverts burn out because they have to operate in an external or in an extrovert world. In fact, 3 out of 4 Americans are extroverts. Yeah, we do, and we didn't bring it with us, but we could get that for you if you remind. Okay. Okay.
Like not for myself, but for my kids.
I think we have that, don't we, Katie?
Like which types are best for engineers or trains?
Yeah.
We'll bring that back for you tomorrow.
Okay, I will be interested.
And we'll give you that tomorrow.
One that we won't get into is also the vocational skills cluster. We won't get into that, but that's a major help along those same lines. And the library has the one that we've chosen to use. That's another major area of help for younger people.
Let me just cover one other issue, and then we'll need to close. Take your book, this book that I gave you. Wait, one more book. Don't let me forget it before you leave. But turn to page 8 and 9. I just want to cover one other aspect, and we won't go into all the details of this, but just to give it to you. They have, in your preferences, by the way, this area here is what Myers-Briggs refers to as your dominant functions. Doesn't have to do with where you gain energy from or your lifestyle. It has to do with how you gather information, how you make decisions. They call that your dominant functions. And in these four, you have a preference that you make your best contribution in. It's the one that you'll just naturally go to. On page 9, you'll see, according to your type and the information they've gathered, as to what your dominant function is. Let me give you a moment to look for your type and then look for your dominant function. For instance, I'll give you one. I'm an ENTJ down all the way to the right-hand corner. The dominant function is what there?
Thinking.
The second is what? Okay, one of the things that I almost had no opportunity to do last year is to think and be intuitive. We had to operate as a sensor and feeler in all across the country. And that was one of the things that almost wore me out because I didn't do that. You've got to have time to operate and contribute in your dominant function if, again, you feel that's your type, because that's where you're going to make your best contribution. I make my best contribution to the U.S. navigators and to the U.S. director team when I have time to think through things and make a contribution there. The second best contribution I make is intuitive, big ideas, where are we going, future thinking. That's where I make my best. I can do the other, but I can't do the other alone. And we need other people to do other things as well. Look for that on yours. So they have what they call the dominant. You see the little block about halfway down the page. The dominant, what they call the auxiliary, your second one. The tertiary, or your third one. And then the inferior, or the least developed, we would say. One of the interesting things I want to share with you about this as you look at this chart is when you're under exceptional stress, when anger takes control of your life, one of the things they tell us on this is we drop to our fourth one, and that's where we operate from. You really just drop all the way through the chart and go to. So I would go to a feeling. I would just get real sensitive about people values, but it's not my strength. You go to your least dominant one. When you're under stress, heavy stress, or when you're in anger. So it shows that obviously shows as followers of Christ, we should not do that. But it's really interesting to think about it. I could give you a lot of reasons why they feel these are your dominant, but I won't take the time to do that. But you have a dominant one in here, and you ought to be making your best contribution there. It is quarter after.